Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 636th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you American perspective, our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. Get your daily reading from me and other writers over at Beyond the 90 at beyondthe90.substack.com. And, of course, locally on the New York Red Bulls at ajmsports.com. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as we get ready to talk later on this summer, the big Copa America tournament that's coming in, all you can say is, what is going to happen when certain teams are going to be battling in the group stage against some of the best national teams in South America? We're going to see, of course, the great Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Paraguay, Uruguay, Ecuador, Bolivia, Venezuela, and Chile. We're going to see those top nations joining the six CONCACAF teams that are going to be a part of this Copa America tournament that will be here in the United States. It's going to be fantastic. But for one national team that has just came out of nowhere, and right now, I think they've improved themselves with this hiring. For those of you that have already seen the news, Jesse Marsh is now the head coach of the Canadian men's national team. He has taken the job from Canada Soccer, and let me just say right off the bat, this is an excellent hire for Canada. I know what Jesse's all about. You know what Jesse's all about. As of right now, all I can say is they are back, and they are in a better position now and going into the World Cup in 2 years. Obviously, there'll be a Gold Cup. There's no doubt in my mind there will be a Gold Cup for them to be a part of as well. The tactics will be a little bit better. And honestly, you know, after the John Herdman era ended, they brought in, of course, Mauro Biello. And it looks like Biello, obviously, now hopefully he'll stay on as an assistant coach, but I don't know, maybe he'll leave. We'll see about that. We'll have to wait and see. But let me just say this, and I just got to say this, is that right now Canada is looking to get back that magic. Do they have the players? Yes. But the question is, do you feel comfortable with the tactics? Canada said no. That's why they brought over Jesse. And Jesse is going to work his magic for CONCACAF, and he's going to make sure that the Canadian men's national team is going to be a top-notch side. If you watch Jesse Marsh, of course, start his coaching career with, at the time, the Montreal Impact, now, of course, Club de Foot Montreal. Everyone in Canada knows about Jesse Marsh, even though it was only 1 year and it wasn't really that that long ago, but still, though, when he came back to MLS and took on the New York Red Bulls job, that's where he really made his money there as the head coach of the club. Took his talents to Leipzig. And, of course, went to Salzburg, won a couple of Austrian Bundesliga titles, won an Austrian FA Cup title, made some noise in the UEFA Champions League with Salzburg, you know, then went to Leipzig and unfortunately didn't do well, got Leeds out of the relegation zone and stayed in the Premier League and unfortunately could not stay any longer because, as you know, when you're scared of being relegated, you're going to sack the manager. And that's what happened to Marsh. Unfortunately. But I will say this. He's still a good coach. And he's still going to be something special. So I know this from Jesse. And the one sad thing about this entire situation, on a U.S. men's national team perspective, is this. And it has to be said. It's just the typical situation where I knew U.S. soccer was not going to bring over Jesse Marsh. I knew they wouldn't. Why is that? Well, it's really simple. Jesse Marsh is not their type of head coach. Jesse Marsh will not bow down to what U.S. soccer wants. He's going to run the team the way he wants it. He's very opinionated. He has his passion on his sleeve. That's why they got Greg Berhalter. Because he's a yes man. That's why. It's not just the tactics that fails the sniff test. It is also the basically just being a yes man to the Federation. Now, listen, I give Greg Berhalter a lot of credit for beating Mexico, but, you know, isn't it high time to also say, isn't it high time that Greg Berhalter beats these top nations in either Europe or South America and stop being so pig-headed and stubborn? That's why he would never make these adjustments. That's why they lost to the Netherlands the way they did, because Greg Berhalter stuck to his guns and did not make adjustments. If you make adjustments in your attack, then you can do better. And even when they were able to sneak in that second goal against the Netherlands, still wasn't enough. And what happens? We're out of the World Cup in Qatar. Because a true head coach in Louis van Gaal was amazing, number one. He knew what to do. He knew what to do and how to beat Greg Berhalter because he knew Berhalter was never going to change his tactics. He knew it. And it's that stupidity that leads the negativity towards Berhalter. He will never make the adjustments to put the U.S. into a better position. You know, you could have beaten Wales, you drew them. Should have beaten England, and you take the draw, but still, though, it's more of an annoyance to England that they lost to, they drew or lost to us than, you know, beating them, because we haven't beaten them since 1950 in the World Cup. But that's not the point. The point is England hasn't beat us at all. England basically is 0-2-1 in 3 World Cup matches in the group stage. Iran, they had to beat Iran. They had to get revenge for the loss in 1998. They had to beat Iran. They had to, without a doubt. They had to. But when you're taking on a quality head coach in Louis van Gaal and the Netherlands and the way they play football, honestly, Greg Berhalter should have been on his toes, should have been on his guard, and he should have paid better attention to what the hell was going on. Because as soon as Louis van Gaal exploited Berhalter's tactics, it was over and done. And maybe there was a slight light of hope. It was over anyway. So all you can really say is, can U.S. soccer get a better head coach? Yes. Will they? No. And that's the problem, and that's the issue that I have. They won't get a better head coach. They just want someone to say yes, 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 yes. They will stick with him. And don't get me wrong, it's nice to dominate CONCACAF. It's nice to beat Mexico every single time you play them. But if we're honest with ourselves here, and we want to see better things for this national team, honestly, it's time to beat the rest of the world. We'll beat our region without a problem. But the truth is, we need to beat the rest of the world. And if we don't beat the rest of the world, well then, we have ourselves a problem, don't we? We have ourselves a huge problem, and we will still be mired in mediocrity. Do we just want to be in the World Cup for the heck of it? Or do we want to finally be the first nation outside of Europe and South America to finally win that golden trophy, that little golden trophy? The truth is, yes, that's what we're here for. That's what we want. It's just not enough to be a participant in the World Cup anymore. Don't get me wrong, it's great to participate. But now it's time to make a run. Now it's time for our national team to make a run, get to the final, and do it on our soil. Period. We have to. We cannot sit around, hang around, and assume it's going to happen. You assume it, excuse me, you assume it, then without a doubt, you're going to fail. Cannot fail with something like this. So for Canada to get Jesse Marsh, it's just a great get for them. Happy for them. We'll see what happens. But honestly, right now, I feel that Jesse Marsh probably would have been a better pick than Berhalter. It's nice to beat Mexico, but unfortunately, it's just not in the cards right now to just worry about Mexico by themselves. We must be dominant all over the world. And until that happens, unfortunately, we're just not going to be there. And that's the one thing that I think is right now holding us back. So we'll see what happens down the road. Great show for you tonight. My first guest tonight, he covers Austin FC for the Austin Chronicle. Eric Goodman joining me tonight to talk some Austin FC stuff. Eric, good evening, and how are you, sir?
Doing great, Daniel. Trying not to stress too hard about our Knicks, pivotal game 5, but let's talk some soccer.
Absolutely. And, yeah, well, you know, unfortunately it's injuries over there, but hopefully they'll come through this time and they'll do something great. So apparently tomorrow will be this big secret that's being kept by Austin FC. MLS will be making a big announcement, but I believe you have some information about that. What's going on?
Yeah, and this isn't my reporting. It's kind of just connecting to pretty clear dots. There was an ESPN report last week that Austin was in negotiations to host the 2025 MLS All-Star Game with Don Garber, you know, coming into town for an announcement. It seems pretty obvious that that's what they're going to announce. One thing I find kind of the interesting third dot that a lot of people have connected is that earlier this season, Florentino Perez, the president of Real Madrid, was at Q2 Stadium taking in a match with a guest of Anthony Precourt, the owner. Speculation is Real Madrid going to be the opponent for that All-Star game, and that would be obviously incredibly exciting. They're expected to have Mbappe next year, Vinicius Jr., Jude Bellingham. That would be, assuming those guys make the trip and play, which you never know in the heat of summer for those European clubs, but it could be one hell of an event for this club to host.
Absolutely, and why not bring over Real Madrid for a fun night, probably for the All-Star game, and that would be great. And, you know, when was the last time you saw Austin hosting a top-notch club over at the Q2?
Yeah, I mean, it's never happened in terms of a European club. Now, Austin FC and Q2 Stadium have hosted several men's and women's national team games, and all of those you know, I've gotten rave reviews from the players, from the coaches. Teams like coming to Austin. Obviously, it's a fun town to hang out in. There's a lot to do. It's a great energy in that stadium, and the fan base here does show up. Obviously, they've shown up for Austin FC, you know, regardless of how the team's really performed on the field. And anytime there's one of those elevated events, a national team game, a Gold Cup game, and they've also got Copa America coming to town for a couple of the smaller clashes in that event, the fan base does turn up for it.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. So right now, Austin FC sitting in eighth place in a stacked Western Conference, obviously Real Salt Lake right now at the top of the West. What have you seen so far from Austin's current season right now that maybe is things slowly turning towards a positive after what happened last year, or do you think there's still some issues that are plaguing the club?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Last year, I believe Austin was among, when you talk about, you know, unluckiest clubs, you look at like expected goals versus actual goals scored, expected results, you know, they were on the short end of a lot of that. And that's kind of reversed entirely in spurts this season, where Austin's not had a lot of possession in certain games. They've not had, they've been horribly outshot, and especially their road games, and have been able to kind of scratch out results somehow. Again, you want to call that luck, you want to call that just, you know, taking advantage of your slim opportunities, which is, you know, an important skill for a team to have. But and kind of even more to add to that irony, they actually played, in from my opinion, their best road game of the season over the weekend at Dallas, and still came out with a 2-1 defeat. So go figure. It almost seems like the worse they play, the better their results are. But they've got an interesting match coming up tomorrow night, first midweek match of the season, another Texas rivalry against the Houston Dynamo. And I'll be looking to see if they can, you know, be on the right side of that possession, be on the right side of those shots, and come out with 3 points there.
Absolutely. Obviously, Sebastian Giudice is back, and he's back with a vengeance. 11 goals so far in, you know, in these games. My goodness, it's great to see him finally getting that scoring touch back after a, you know, poor year last year.
Yeah, and he's that, even when he's not scoring goals, his presence alone and his creativity is just the engine that makes this team go. I mean, they almost have had no success without him in the lineup in their history. And then when he's been there, it's been night and day. So, you know, they go as he goes. And, you know, they were able to make what I thought was a really smart signing with Diego Rubio, who's, you know, MLS fans will have known of him for many years. They got him on something close to half of his previous salary. And he's been, even if he's not necessarily been the clinical finisher, he's kind of that personality, that irritant that center backs just hate having to go up against. And that does free up a little bit of extra space for Giussi and for some of those wingers to make the kind of offense that Josh Wolf likes to play.
Absolutely, and that's really some great stuff. The cast of characters around Derisi, obviously he's got Zardes with him. He's got 6 goals. Ethan Finlay's got 5. Gallagher's got 5. Ragone's got 5. What has really looked really strong for this Austin FC side for 2024?
Yeah, you know, and some of those guys, like, yeah, you mentioned, you know, their 2023 numbers, none of them really jump off the page at you, and especially somebody like Giazzi Zardes, and then also you think about a designated player in Emiliano Ragone, and that's really where the club is kind of, with the exception of Derisi, they do not have a great record with some of their biggest high-dollar signings. That, you know, their track record with DPs is not good. Again, Driussi's the exception, and when you do hit on one of them to that level, it does kind of paper over a lot of holes. But, you know, the supporting cast is not that great. The defense has been the biggest area of improvement. They got, you know, journeyman center back Brendan Heinzeich, who's just kind of been that stable presence back there in center back. And then Brad Stuvers had he's been the best goalkeeper in MLS this year by some distance, especially when you look at not just leading the league in saves, but also has a really great save percentage and goals against record. You know, normally if you're at the top of the league in saves, it usually also correlates with you're giving up a lot of goals just because teams are, you know, firing on all cylinders against you. But they've been tough to break down, and now they just have to get a little bit more production from the offense.
Now, have you heard any rumblings from ownership? Obviously, Anthony Precourt is probably not enjoying seeing Austin being in eighth place right now in the West. And obviously, there's plenty of games left to go. We really shouldn't be panicking. I mean, have there been any rumblings that you've heard that maybe Josh Wolf's job is in jeopardy?
It's a question that everybody loves to discuss here. And you know, I compare Josh Wolf. He's kind of like he feels like a two-term president in his last year in terms of approval rating. Like, he's just, you know, nobody's super high on him. There's a lot of animosity towards him in the fan base. And I don't know how much of that is necessarily fair and deserved. He's dealt with a lot of control with this club. You know, Claudio Reyna was their sporting director a little over a year ago, and we know, you know, the mess that turned into, totally threw their roster construction out of whack. And now they've brought in Rodolfo Borrell, who was Pep Guardiola's top assistant coach as recently as 2 years ago at Manchester City. He's brought a new idea for how this club, how he wants it to be built, but it takes time, and we're very early on in those stages. I think if Josh is able to keep this club just on the edge fighting throughout the season for a playoff berth, even if it's not a top four berth, I think he'll be okay in terms of being the coach next season and at least giving himself a chance to have more of a settled roster around him.
Let me ask you, since Rodolfo Borrell has joined the club as sporting director and chief soccer officer, What's the man been like? Has he been, I mean, I'm assuming he's been honest with everyone in the media and the fans to tell them what's going on. What have you thought about him and his job so far since coming to Austin?
You know, so in terms of the job he's done, there's not a ton to go off because, he came in, the club was hamstrung by some bad contracts. They got Rodney Redis, the club's first ever signing, never panned out. They were able to get him off the books this year. Ragone's a big one, obviously, that just hasn't paid dividends. So, he's only really been able to make, you know, signings on the margins to this point. But in terms of just kind of his presence, what it's been like to speak with him, get to know him, it's hard not to have a ton of respect and admiration. He is a straight shooter. He's not afraid to answer tough questions. If it's a question that, we all know these clubs are just not going to answer certain things, he's at least upfront about that, doesn't try to kind of spin it or change the question on you. And I think, you can respect that. It's honestly something that Josh, it'd be great if he kind of was able to emulate a little bit more. He's notoriously very tight-lipped, doesn't have an admiration for the media. But, Borrell's been a revelation, and, he's a guy that gives you a lot of confidence that he does have a plan, that he does know what he's doing.
That's great to hear. I mean, after all, we remember that nice little moment you had back in the day. Josh Wolf absolutely going crazy on the media, especially asking these silly questions. What the heck was going on? I mean, it's just a little nothing, Josh. Come on. You know, you got to do your jobs. Come on now. You got to ask these questions.
That you're preaching to the choir. It's, you know, and not necessarily everybody who – MLS is such a wild card when you compare it to other sports in terms of the media coverage, because it's not as mainstream. We know this. There are a lot of people who come at it more from the fan point of view. And so in Josh's mind, media and fans, he seems to kind of view them as one and the same. That's not how I go about my business. I know that's not how you go about your business covering the Red Bulls and all the other teams that you talk about. So, you know, it's not going to change the way, you know, I do my job, but it certainly does make it a little bit more challenging when you're kind of, you know, grouped as if you were just a fan.
Absolutely. And one thing's for sure, we just got to make sure that we stick to our principles and make sure we inform these teams. You know, listen, we're here to do a job. That's all it is. We're here to do a job, and that's all it is. It's nice to have the privilege of being behind the scenes, but still, though, you know, we have a job to do, and we're there to inform the fans about what goes on with these clubs that we cover. As you said, Austin, you got two straight home games right now. You got midweek against Houston over at the Q2, and then you're hosting Sporting Kansas City. I mean, this looks like a 6-point swing, hopefully. What do you think Austin needs to do to make sure they get on the straight and narrow here and they do not falter against these two sides?
I think they need – a lot of what I have noticed covering the team is a lot of it boils down to just belief and confidence that they can possess the ball. You know, that's this team's at its best when they're dominating possession. Obviously, they don't have tremendous names in defense. They've done well, but Austin's best defense is just them having the ball. And when they're dangerous, when you can get it onto Driussi's foot, and we've seen kind of the emergence of Owen Wolf recently, who's an exciting young prospect, obviously the son of Josh Wolf, but a really, you know, exciting player in his own right. They need to get those guys involved. They need to see a lot of the ball and just kind of be relentless against teams like Houston that will probably allow them to have the ball in a road match.
Absolutely. We'll see what they can do here in these next two games, of course, midweek and, of course, on the weekend. We'll see what they'll do moving forward. Now, one more thing, obviously, within Austin. Is there any exciting prospects we should be looking out for from Austin FC 2? Who do you think should or could be, you know, coming up through the ranks to reach the first team for this year that might surprise people?
Yeah, the biggest name, and he might still be a full year away. He did sign a professional first team contract, but that would be Micah Byrne, and he's kind of a number 10 midfielder, not a big guy. You know, small, very shifty. Haven't gotten a chance to watch him a ton, and he hasn't gotten minutes yet for the senior team. But like I said, he's already signed his contract. He's been playing a lot for Austin FC 2. And he's, you know, this team has got such a young academy, and that's been one of Rodolfo Borrell's biggest points, and Anthony Precourt, to be fair, is they want to build up this academy. Micah Burton is really the first player that's spent really his entire academy career with Austin FC. And he's definitely somebody that's in their plans for the long term, if not necessarily this season.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens there. Eric, as always, thanks a lot for joining me tonight. Hope you have a very good evening, and let's go Knicks.
Let's go Knicks. Daniel, they went on a great run as we were talking, so I think that's a good sign. Talk to you soon.
It is. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Once again, Eric Goodman from the Austin Chronicle, talking about Austin FC as, you know, at the moment they're in a playoff position, and it's still, you know, we're still in May, so there's still plenty of season left to go. And then, of course, there's the League's Cup, but, you know, we're not going to worry about that right now. So we'll see what happens, Austin FC fans, and maybe, hopefully, Austin will make the climb up in the East, you know, Western Conference table, and maybe be in a better position for the playoffs. We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen there. Now, We're going to continue talking about Jesse Marsh. And this is where I feel bad if you are a Canadian soccer fan. Because even though this is a great pickup and a great hire for Canada soccer, I feel really, really bad for a Canadian soccer fan when the Canadian Soccer Federation has to ask, or even if you don't want to say they asked, but in reality, they probably did. They probably did ask. And basically begged for money because the Canadian Soccer Federation is broke. They had to get, and this is, you know, philanthropic support from MLS owners. And here is the situation that happened. The appointment of Marsh is assisted by major philanthropic contributions from the owners of the three Canadian-based MLS clubs, obviously the Vancouver Whitecaps, Club de Foot Montreal's owner, Joey Saputo, and, of course, Toronto FC's owners, which are the Toronto Maple Leafs in Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, and supplemented by other private donors in recognition of their significant philanthropic support. Marsh's position will be formally titled as the MLS Canada Men's National Team Head Coach during the term of his initial contract. This type of donor recognition is common at universities and hospitals in NCAA sports and is starting to be used in the Canadian sports system. For example, with the Stollery Family Women's National Team Head Coach support at Golf Canada. Now, let me just say something right now. I think that's a bunch of hogwash. I think it is terrible. I think it is underhanded. I think it is just disgusting that Canada Soccer has to ask for financial support from the three MLS clubs to give them the money, or to for them to give their money to pay Jesse Marsh under the disguise of Canada Soccer. This is flat out wrong. Look, I don't know what happened. They had a great run in World Cup qualifying. They've had great support Toronto, in Hamilton, in Edmonton. What the hell happened? Montreal, they went to the World Cup. Of course, FIFA gives all of their associations, all the different football associations, the opportunity to earn a certain percentage after each and every World Cup. I'm assuming CONCACAF does it after each and every Gold Cup to their constituents in all these football associations. Where did all the money go? Where did all the money go, Canada Soccer? How is that possible? That the Canadian Soccer Association is broke? How? How? And I really do hope I will have on someone on my next show about this situation, because the truth of the matter is this. I feel bad for everyone in Canada who supports this game, that loves the game up in Canada, that they are getting swindled, bamboozled. Now, I'm not saying the hiring is a bamboozling attempt. No, that's a great attempt. Hiring Jesse Marsh was excellent. It's the manner of how they did it, meaning paying him That is just absolutely terrible. I just don't understand how Canada soccer can look every Canadian soccer fan in the face and tell them, here's how we hired Jesse Marsh. Here's how we hired him. You know what? All I can say is this. They were that desperate to bring him over. They were that desperate to have him, and I understand. Honestly, this is not the way it should have been done. They should have tried to find more sponsors, more support that way, but I guess no one wants to give it to them. I don't know who runs Canada Soccer. In fact, I'll probably take a look anyway because I can go to the CONCACAF website and I can find out basically who is running it, the entire situation. I mean, they're based in Ottawa. But I'm telling you right now, folks, this is terrible. This is just absolutely terrible to see what in the hell is going on here. Just terrible. I mean, I don't know what to say anymore. I don't know what to tell you. And if you are Canadian and you're listening to this right now, I mean, I feel bad for you guys. The president is Mr. Pete Augrusso. Your vice president is Paul-Claude Berube. The General Secretary is Kevin Blue, Treasurer Brian Burden, Sean Hefferman. Technical Director is Dave Nutt. And there it is right there for the men's national team coach, it's Jesse Marsh. The national team coach for the women is Bev Priestman. You know, I mean, you got to ask the question to Mr. Peter Augrusso, what in the hell is going on? How can you hire this man? And you're asking for philanthropic financial assistance from the top three clubs that represent not only Canada, but Major League Soccer. Just don't understand it. It's really a shame. It's really a shame. We'll just have to wait and see what's going to happen here. But let me just say this once again. I do believe in Jesse. I know he's going to be an excellent head coach for Canada, and he's going to do some magical things. And hopefully we'll have more on this subject later on a next show whenever we can get that opportunity. And now it's time to talk about the New York Red Bulls. They had a horrible match against Inter Miami, getting destroyed 6-2. They came back to Red Bull Arena, and they defeated New England Revolution, who are dead last in the East, by a final of 4-2. Sean Nealis, which I originally thought was Dylan Nealis. I made a mistake. Sean Nealis delivered a great cross, a looping ball down the pitch, saw Lewis Morgan just hanging around, staying onside, made a run, and beat Ivacic for the opening goal. A little bit hairy later on, obviously, from Carlos Gil on a brilliant cross from Chunkalai to make it 1-1. Then, of course, it was a penalty late in the first half, handball, Henry Kessler. Now, look, he did handle it, not intentionally, but it was a handball, and it was after VAR, because it wasn't called originally. VAR came in, said it's a goal, and it was right to give the yellow card. I didn't think it was a red card. Should not have been a red card. Yellow card is fine. Or if you just want to give the penalty, just give the penalty. That's it. But it gave a yellow card to Kessler. And then, of course, it's the captain, Emil Forsberg, who buries the chance. He's 3-for-3 right now at the spot. 2-1. Nothing going on late in the second half until Elise Manuel buries his chance to make it 3-1. Due to VAR coming in, of course, it was a goal that was rightly scored, called offside, but it was not offside. It was the correct decision by VAR to reverse that call to make it a goal, to make it 3-2. But right away, the Red Bulls made it 4-2. Cameron Harper with an excellent chip shot to beat Ivicic to make it 4-2. And the New York Red Bulls are back in third place in the Eastern Conference with a big, big win at home. And the New York Red Bulls right now in third place in the Eastern Conference. They are 4 points behind Cincinnati. They are 7 points behind Miami. They still have a match in hand for the Red Bulls. So we'll see what happens there. But let me just say this. Let me just say this. And it's got to be said. Great job by Sandro Schwarz to turn things around and find a way to recover, get back on the horse, and put on a spectacular performance at home against the New England Revolution. Just absolutely fantastic. And all I can say is that Sandro Schwarz definitely has a pulse on the club. He definitely has a pulse on the club. He knows what to do. He knows how to get the best out of them. And right now, Sandro Schwarz is doing some great work with the New York Red Bulls right now. In 12 matches, 5 wins, 5 draws, and only 2 losses. When did you ever remember seeing the New York Red Bulls have 2 losses in their first 12 matches? Not me. I've never seen it. I've never seen it done. And all I can say is it is absolutely fantastic to see this Red Bull team looking better, playing better. And Schwarz has definitely done a great thing. Now, they have 2 big games this week. Midweek down our nation's capital against DC United. And Saturday, they got to go to Queens for the first time to take on New York City FC at Citi Field. You just got to say this. If Sandro Schwarz can get the six point week here, this would be incredible from him. DC United has been improving, even though not all the way yet, but they have been improving under Troy Lessain. And as of right now, New York City FC has basically jumped up into fifth place. So right now, for the Red Bulls, it's a very big moment for them, because once these games have been played, they're going to be on a week break, and they'll come back the following week at the end of the month, and they'll be playing at home against Charlotte FC in midweek action, and then they will go and they will remain at home against Orlando City on the weekend. So, you know, got to get the points now. Got to get the points right now. And find a way to remain in the top 3 position in the Eastern Conference. We'll see what happens. We'll definitely see what happens when Miami's going to lose certain players for the Copa America. But I'm telling you right now, the New York Red Bulls are looking pretty good and pretty strong, and it's just unbelievable to see what's been happening here. It's just been absolutely fantastic. So it's going to be a lot of fun this week for the Red Bulls. We'll see what happens tomorrow night against DC United down at Audi Field in the nation's capital. And then what's going to happen when they head to Queens on the weekend to face New York City FC at Citi Field. We'll wait to see what's going to happen there. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guest tonight, Eric Goodman from the Austin Chronicle. Thank you very much for listening to my show. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Join me next week for another regular Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. And as always, please, I beg of you, always please, enjoy your football. Thank you. Take care. So long, and have a good night. Bye-bye, everybody.